And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just Something I've Noticed. We don't give enough credit to signs, and we really should. That sign over there tells you, great French fries. That sign over there tells you, this is your exit. And look at that legendary sign. It's the Motel 6 sign. It tells you, a great night's rest at a great price. Book online at motel6.com and use the code CPRedEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby. Look for the signs. And truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a great price when you use the code CPRedEye. That's the letters CPRedEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel6.com. That's a great deal. And that's Just Something I've Noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. Kids, it's Friday. I know this because I just looked down at my phone. Gary, happy Friday to you. How are you?
I'm doing great. Chuckling a little bit. Just was looking at the headline in Fox News.
Yeah.
Game on. That's what it said. Game on. Biden draws first Democratic challenger for 2024. Okay. As Marianne Williamson confirms plans to launch bid.
Calm down, Fox News. Game on. Ooh, it's going to get spicy now.
And I guess one of the reasons that caught me was...
She's not in her prime?
No. I did not say that.
You're going to have some training over the weekend.
No, the reason that headline, when it said game on, I'm like, it's Marianne Williamson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it was earlier in the day when I was looking at the front page of FoxNews.com. And, yeah. they have that story. They had, Buttigieg in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at the different headline news related. And all of a sudden, right in the middle of it, golf influencer Paige Sporanic post a golf tip video in low-cut shirt. Fans can't contain themselves. Sporanic was teaching how to grip a club while wearing a low-cut shirt. That's in Fox. That was in the front page of FoxNews.com.
To be clear, I'm assuming that's a female.
Yes, yes, in her prime.
Because John Daly does that a lot. He wears those low cut shirts.
Well, he has the figure to do so.
Let's just say he fills out his shirts nicely.
John Daly, not in his prime.
No, for John Daly,
yeah, he is. He is in his prime. But I'm thinking, and this guy Ryan Morick wrote the story on, she's, you see her all the time on Twitter. She's posting, golf things and risque whatever. You see it all over social media.
Oh, it's kind of her thing then. Okay.
Yeah, that's what her thing is. Yeah, okay. A golf influencer. Right. That's really her thing. And then she gets in debates back and forth with people, but it's always in something. Let's put it this way: a significant portion of the time she is scantily clad. I don't really believe. Now this is just me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really think the primary thing she is selling is golf. But I'm
it's
thinking,
not about the game.
So
or it's not about that game.
Well, it may be
she may have a different game.
Well, it may be about tips and things like that about the game. But what's supposed to draw you in is not, well, I'd like to hear her expertise on how to hold my nine iron.
Yeah.
especially if I'm just fading it off a little bit to the right.
Yeah.
But I was thinking that it was written by Ryan Morick. And I'm thinking, I have no idea who Ryan Morick is.
Okay.
But works for Fox News.
All right.
And I'm thinking, you finally get your job, you know, at Fox News. And it's right. like, you know, okay. And
yeah.
probably a lot of reporters, if it, you know, if they're drawn to Fox News, it's because of, you know, probably being a journalist and also might be leaning a little bit conservative.
Yeah.
Right?
Or at the very least, you want to go where they have ratings in cable news.
Right. But yeah, but I'm talking about FoxNews.com.
Yeah.
I'm talking
about
even, you know.
Sure.
Even, but you want to be a writer. You want to get some of these important stories out.
Mm-hmm.
And then they sit there and say, all right, look, Joe, you cover the Ohio thing. Jennifer, you're going to cover the Chinese balloon. Do a Chinese balloon thing and whether saying Chinese balloon is racist. That's a good one. Yeah, it's what you do, Jennifer. That's how you're going to do that one. Let me see. What else do we have? Let me see. Okay, you cover Trump. You cover DeSantis. You cover Nikki Haley. And Ryan, you cover Paige Spiranic's posts on social media when she is in a low-cut shirt. And make it exciting, like fans can't contain themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I have no idea what that means.
Hey, listen, we need somebody new to cover Buttigieg. Does anybody have a bicycle? Anyone?
So that's what got me, because, you know, that got me early in the day. I'm like, oh, my gosh, it's on the front page.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, stop it. Just stop it.
Right.
You know, it's, and then it's like, okay, I need to go where I'm not going to see this. Where's the New York Post? Oh, well, no, sorry. Doesn't.
Yeah. Well,
doesn't,
wait as a minute. Long as you're on pages 1-5.
Hold it. Let me go to the Wall Street Journal editorial page or National Review.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'll be safe. But it just.
Well, for now.
I can, well, not safe, but a place. Where it's safe, where I can get real news,
yeah,
and real commentary without throwing that in. And so I just wonder, you know, because you and I've always asked this question. The Daily Caller, before they, you know, went in a paywall, would always do the same thing too.
Mm-hmm.
They'd have all these, you know, news stories, and it's like, this actress looks stunning in her bikini.
Mm-hmm.
For God's sakes, you're the Daily Caller.
Yeah,
I'm looking for.
Yeah,
I know where to find that, and
right.
I'm thinking, do they do focus groups? And is it like, yes, I go to FoxNews.com for the news, but once in a while, I like to see a picture of Paige Spiranic giving golf tips in a low cut shirt.
Don't need to; they get the clicks. They see the clicks
see
right
the
away.
Clicks, yes.
It's people are clicking on it, and that's why they keep doing it. By the way, I only click on it once.
So cleavage sells,
yeah,
across the board.
Right. Okay. Aside from John Daly's cleavage.
All right.
Yeah. Still not enough to get me interested in golf.
But still, when I saw that, game on. I'm like, game on what? And the funny thing is, When I saw it for game on, it's like, mm-hmm. Biden draws first Democratic challenger. And I'm thinking, and I just, you know, we had talked about Marianne Williamson the other day, you know, probably going to announce. But I'm thinking, is it another name? And in my mind, the first thing that entered my mind was, before I got to the second sentence, or the second part of that, the headline, which was, you know, Marianne Williamson confirms plans. I'm saying to myself, please God, let it be Buttigieg.
Yeah.
It's like, please.
Yeah.
Or Skater Boy.
Yeah, maybe. It's not going to happen for Miss Williams.
No. It isn't game on.
No, it is not. It is not. You know, you look at it and you see a handful of Democrats in the Senate that basically are saying, you know, yeah, I'm going to be running in 24, the ones that are up in 24. And, you know, as that comes about, we watch them try and be more moderate. You know, tester. You know, well, he's more of a moderate, and then you know, the back and forth on Manchin over the weekend. I just thought to myself, look, you got to own what's going on with your party. It used to be you could separate pretty clearly. Kyrsten Sinema has been vocal. And then she did the official separation by leaving the party. But this is, you know, I look at it and I say, you know, the cycle is going to be, the party is going to carry them to doom or not. And it doesn't matter. Tester might be able to get away with it in Montana. I don't know about Kyrsten Sinema. And I don't know if somebody's going to take on Joe Manchin, a Republican, a strong Republican.
I saw the story yesterday, and we never got to it yesterday. They said Manchin's is announced he's not running for president.
Uh-huh.
My God.
Yeah.
That was the biggest non-news story
of the day.
It was non-news,
exactly. I don't know anybody that was even mentioning his name.
I did see the headline, but I think I forgot where I saw it, but I only saw the headline on one website. I didn't see it anywhere else.
It's No, I saw it. Was it
Fox?
I think it was, because it was part of an alert. But, you know, it was, you know, his focus is going to be on a state as the talk of GOP challengers.
It is Fox. There it is. Joe Manchin, not running for president.
Yeah. Okay.
At least they didn't put game not on.
Yeah, game not on for Joe Manchin. Well, I mean, you know, I look at it and I think to myself, then you go back to the GOP. What was it, a couple of months ago when they announced we're going to pick strong candidates? And it's like, you know, it's 2023, right? Yeah. I mean, you've been going on for years. And the point was, is they believe it clearly. They believe that in Georgia and Pennsylvania, they didn't have strong candidates.
Well, didn't they actually say not just strong candidates, but wasn't the headline the GOP has, you know, met and decided we want to pick candidates who can win?
Yeah, I don't remember that verbiage.
I remember that headline.
Yeah.
Yes,
but I mean that have been, you know, one of the stories on the same story, or one of the versions of the same story.
Because we died laughing, saying, oh, they want to pick candidates who can win. Oh, you're a political party.
Right.
Wow, now that's unique.
And, you know, I think if you're going to, as a party, go out and groom candidates, they certainly, number one, need to be electable.
Except if you're the Democratic Party.
Well, you know, because I thought to myself, okay, with the stuff over the weekend, you know, with Tester and Manchin and those stories popping up, and it's like, okay, if you're going to go into Arizona and challenge Sinema, right, what are you going to do there? If you're going to go into Montana and challenge Tester, who do you send? You know, you got to find people that can appeal to the people of those states. It's not just about the national picture.
I know how you beat Sinema.
Mm-hmm.
You simply post a picture of that god-awful contraption she wore at the State of the Union.
The yellow thing?
Yeah.
So I didn't know she's got a side gig. She sells dresses and outfits. I saw that, and I'm like, what is she doing?
I said, is this
what
the
point is she making?
Is this the red carpet for the Grammys or something?
Right. No, I mean, it was just bizarre. Over the top. With the big blooming shoulders and like, wow, what was this? Is she going to the prom? Did she think this was the prom?
Just post that big picture, post it behind you.
Yeah.
It says, I'm just so you know, I'm announcing I'm running for Senate and I'm running against her.
Yeah. Right. And the dress. I think to myself, I wonder how much people will pay for the dress that's been worn to the State of the Union. But it's still that dress. You know what I mean? It's not like a normal dress.
No, I don't know how popular that would
be. Well, it would be, you know, it would be one thing if this was Nancy Reagan's, dress jacket or something that she wore to her husband's first State of the Union or his inaugural address, the inauguration and inaugural address and things like that. I don't know how far it goes. I am curious to know how much money she's making because she's selling them. She sells those clothes, and that was and I thought to myself, all right, fine.
I thought Devo had reunited and she was the first female member.
Yeah.
When I saw that.
I thought they were going to do a bit on Sesame Street. I thought the president was going to acknowledge Sesame Street and Big Bird. It was a big yellow loud dress.
Yeah, it was the shoulders that got to me.
Yeah, no, it was.
It was like, what? What in God's world? Who consulted you? I didn't know she was selling them.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I read the
story, and then it said in the story she sells her clothes that she wears, and I thought, okay, and she's going to list this at some point as a dress worn by a senator at a State of the Union address. I don't know that would matter.
As you can tell, we have a great show ahead.
We do.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tires command a lot of attention. As a top expense for drivers and a leading cause of CSA violations, any tire maintenance practice that can help extend tire life is worth consideration. Consider tire balancing, which can set you up for savings and a smoother ride before your tires touch the highway. Tire balancing corrects an uneven distribution of weight in tires and wheel assemblies, but the trick is to be proactive and not reactive. Conduct routine pre- and post-trip tire inspections and pay special attention to inflation. Tires with too little air will wear prematurely and create more resistance, which can result in increased fuel consumption, a harsher ride, and ultimately lead to a blowout. This report is brought to you by Shell Rotella. Shell Rotella, with advanced synthetic technology, is designed to help keep your rig running with more mileage and less maintenance.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just Something I've Noticed. There's a lot more yawning these days. Have you noticed that? Yeah. And the bad thing about yawning, it's contagious. Now, I'm not a scientist, but I do know that's true. You see somebody else yawn, all of a sudden, you got to yawn. Do you know what helps to curtail the yawning? How about a great night's rest at Motel 6? Book online at motel6.com. Use the code CPREDEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby. And truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a price you will love when you use the code CPREDEye. That's the letters CPREDEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel 6. And help curtail the yawning. That's just something I've noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Progressive Commercial Insurance protects truck owners with specialized coverages.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Well, Buttigieg made an appearance in East Palestine, Ohio, yesterday.
Was it a mistake not to come here sooner?
What I tried to do was balance two things. My desire to be involved and engaged and on the ground, which is how I am generally wired to act, and my desire to follow the norm of... transportation secretaries, allowing NTSB to really lead the initial stages of the public-facing work.
It was bad.
That's how he's wired, though.
Yeah, it's always. I mean, it's just it's bad, and nobody's. By the way, nobody's buying the excuse.
No.
Right? I didn't want to interfere with the NTSB. You don't. You know, you go there and we stated what he should have done from day one. The next morning, he should have done a press conference, and you're there, and you have the head of the EPA, the federal EPA, the state EPA, the governor, the mayor, and an NTSB representative, if they have anything to report. And if they don't, then the NTSB doesn't have to be there. But it came out yesterday. Well, first off, I talked about one dumb thing that I hate this week, and this is the second one that I hate. And it is when you see this, everybody's trying to politicize this. They're all politicians. That's the only thing they can do. Everything is politicized. I love how they talk about, and the media talks about it consistently. We need to stop politicizing things. We politicize everything. If you didn't politicize something, that would be news. But we politicize everything.
Yeah.
And it's not a bad thing. It can be a bad thing. It's a bad thing, for example, Buttigieg, when he politicized and said it's Trump's fault because of the new brake system that hasn't been put on. Mm-hmm. But as we said, when he said that, the NTSB already had said they didn't believe that that was the cause. Mm-hmm. Now we know that was not the cause. Mm-hmm. So everything that Buttigieg talks about that we need to do had nothing to do with the actual accident. That would be politicizing something by giving disinformation, lying, whatever.
Yeah, blaming the opposition instead of addressing the people on the ground.
Yeah,
and dealing with
and the real cause of the accident.
The Bona Show.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Then, of course, as we predicted, and we don't make many predictions unless we're positive, we're going to be right. But we said the number one question is going to be about East Palestine and why it took so long for the Secretary of Transportation to respond and the president, you know, why he hasn't been there. And that was probably the number one question yesterday. Here's one moment with Karine Jean-Pierre.
Two questions. First of all, the president frequently visits the sites of many natural and man-made disasters, and this situation in East Palestine has clearly required a multi-agency response from the federal and the state level. So I guess I'm just struggling to understand why the president wouldn't go to East Palestine. Does it simply not meet the bar for a presidential visit?
Look, I want to be very clear here.
All right, first tick that she does.
Uh-huh.
I want to be very clear here. That's where she's stalling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we've noticed that before. That's one thing that she does on a consistent basis when she doesn't know how to answer. And again, she's looking down and flipping through the book.
Right.
The look is horrible, and it has always been horrible. And you saw that more from the press department are leaving the White House.
Yeah.
And she's not.
No, I was surprised she wasn't the first to announce she was leaving.
And then more of this year. Here we go.
There's no reason to struggle, I don't think, on this question. I think when you look at how the federal agencies have responded from day one and took this very seriously.
Those are probably that I want to be very clear here, and we take this very seriously, are two of the phrases that she uses as a crutch consistently when she is not going to answer your question.
Yeah, right. Well, and then she also does see, she folds in the, as we have been saying, as we have been talking about, as we have.
Even though they haven't been talking about
right.
it.
No, I mean, it's what she's actually saying is, well, you're not paying attention. It's a form of gaslighting. You know, and this, it's, that is a, basically, it's almost like mocking the reporter. Like, how could you ask such a stupid question? As she looks through her book of answers. Good, then give me a stupid answer. What page is it on? Just hand us a copy of the book.
Well, there's nothing in it. It's like, I never forget.
Yeah, during, no, it says.
I never forget during the Clinton administration, somebody sent me a book one time, and it was like the accomplishments of the Bill Clinton administration, and every page inside the book is blank.
Yeah. No, every page starts with, I want to be clear.
Yeah. And the initial report on the from the NTSB, again, and this is something that the left and the NTSB had said early on, they believed it was, you know, wheel bearings.
Yeah, overheating of the wheel bearings, and they're saying that there had been complaints about this leading up to the crash. And so I think that's how they knew early on.
And the head of the NTSB actually said that because Jake Tapper asked her that specific question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She goes, well, that had nothing to do with it.
Right.
And that's what they've been pounding on. And then everything else they've been pounding on, you know, the whole thing that he actually, you know, it became a liberal shopping list, including the fact that, you know, there has to be more, you know, personal time for rail workers.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything that we went through in December, you know, with that contract. And it's like it just became. And so, you know, it just drives me crazy when people say they're politicizing it. Well, yeah, you politicize everything. That's a given. If politicians don't politicize something, that would be the headline because they're politicians. So they're always going to be accused of politicizing. It's what is accurate in their statements for a politician to use the truth and somebody say he's politicizing it by saying this. Well, I don't care. Is it the truth?
Right.
Politicizing something by saying, I'm telling you the truth and the other person isn't, and that politician is actually telling you the truth, is good politicizing of an issue. If you don't know what's going on, or you ignore, as Buttigieg did early on, the very, very early analysis of the NTSB, and you say it's something else, and the NTSB hasn't said that, that is bad. Politicalization of an issue, end of story. But let's just stop with it. The other thing that got to me earlier this week again is because I saw it on Facebook a couple times was the whole thing of Social Security and Medicaid. They're calling them entitlements. They're not entitlements. You've earned it.
Mm-hmm.
Which why they call them entitlements.
It's a true entitlement. Yeah. Don't confuse it with entitlement mentality.
So those are the two things that got to me this week. It was that one early. I think that one was Monday where I went, I saw it again. Mm-hmm. It's making the rounds again.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and whenever it's on Facebook or Twitter, everybody, you're so right. You're so right. How dare they call it an entitlement program? Do we even think anymore?
Yeah, right.
And so I just, you know, but this whole thing, they're politicizing it. Well, yes, they're politicians.
It's got to be political.
Eric and Gary, they're talking again.
Come on, all you do is talk the entire show. What is going on?
Right. Stop talking. Play some music.
What happened? Where's the band?
How come all I hear on your talk show is talk? Stop talking. I mean, this is, sometimes we don't realize, you know, it's like, it just takes a moment to say, well, wait a minute, they're politicians. Mm-hmm. What do they do? Okay, anything they say, they'll be accused of politicizing it. So yeah. I don't care whether they politicize something.
Yeah.
It's whether they're telling the truth in politicizing something, which is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get elected because I believe this is the way things should go. They believe this should go that way. I'm telling you the truth. They're lying.
Right.
Well, if they are lying and you are telling the truth, well, that's good and I should vote for you. Mm. or that should be a reason I should consider voting for you. Not the only reason, but it should be one of the reasons.
Yeah.
You're telling me the truth. And the other people are not. So, yeah, this isn't, it's not going to go good. And then what's going to happen is they're just going to be pounding on this over and over again.
Mm.
And then next week the president will visit when he feels that he is forced to politically, because they react to everything. They are not proactive. Everything is a reaction. The only thing that I will say would be proactive is the fact, and I do believe the reason that he went to Ukraine is, again, is a reaction to, you know, he was proactive is that in that he went and nobody knew he was going to go and nobody was begging him to go.
Right.
Or telling him that he should go. But it was still, I believe, in reaction to all the bad things domestically going on. So it was still a political reaction in some manner or form. But that would be, as a political consultant, that would be the first thing. And maybe that's why they can't find a political consultant to lead. They've gone through, the three people have refused already to be part of, you know, his political team, because they've told him what he doesn't want. You react to everything. You're not proactive. And everything you are proactive on, the polling shows the American public hates. And that's what a political consultant worth their salt and not just a yes person to collect a check would tell the president.
Right. But the problem with this president is that you can't tell him anything. He's defiant at every turn. I think internally, it stands to reason that there is internal strife, because you can't control the guy. And every time you throw something at him, he gets defiant. Then you put him in front of the media and he says, they told me I can't talk about that. You know, I mean,
has that ever happened in I'll say this right now. I won't ask the question.
Hmm.
I don't believe that's ever happened in the modern history of presidents that I can remember. And that takes us all the way back to Kennedy that I remember. I don't remember anyone ever saying they told me not to talk about it.
Right.
As president of the United States.
And he says it at every turn on major issues.
By the way, in that early story when we talked about Game On with Marianne Williamson running, I did in my head, you know, and it's not going to happen, but I was thinking, could you imagine her as the nominee on the stage with DeSantis?
Yeah.
And then I thought, could you imagine her on the stage with Trump? Trump, you know, walking back and forth the way he does, looking, going, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, right.
Her? Seriously?
Mm.
Well, Mr. Trump, do you believe then, you just said that sarcastic comment towards her, do you believe that she's not in her prime? She'd never been in her prime.
Right.
There's never been a prime. And if there is a prime, this is it. It's not going to get any better.
Yeah, this is as good as it gets. Prime or no prime, this is not getting any better.
Exactly. Oh, man. I'm telling you, just what a zoo of a day it was yesterday. But, yeah, and the whole, when the NTSB came out, it's like, well, okay, everything Buttigieg says is wrong.
Yeah.
He was politicizing it in a bad way, and that's how you view it. You can politicize something in a good way or a bad way. He knew early on, because the NTSB within a week, had a couple of days, had what they thought was the preliminary reason.
Right.
And now their initial report that's actually come in backs up what they said early on.
Mm-hmm.
So Buttigieg knew that. And he just made something up. I'm going to make up what it is because I'm going to make up what it is and then throw a whole bunch of other things that have nothing to do with this accident. Well, that's bad. That's bad politics.
Right.
When you're not being honest with the American public, and it's that simple.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that Jennifer Hamady of the NTSB said is we call things accidents, but everything we investigate is 100% preventable. And so you look at this one and say, okay, all right, you know, what were the warning signs and what do you do going forward? But I thought that was interesting because I extrapolate that out to everything that the NTSB gets involved in and investigates. And it's if you go back and read reports of different types of crashes, not just a train derailment, but when a plane crashes and comes down and the cause of it, these are, you know, at this point, there likely will be a huge push on chemicals and how they're transported.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's beyond the equipment failure. You know, that's kind of what they're handling. Then it will be, okay, should we be putting chemicals on trains? Should we be, I mean, that's going to be the call. You know, already if you look at trucking and hazmat materials, you know, all that stuff has to move. It has to go. It has to, you have to take it somewhere. And a lot of that stuff is, you know, if you talk about herbicides and pesticides, it's in concentrated form. I have friends that drive trucks, and they're hauling very dangerous stuff, you know. But when it comes to the forefront through a crash or a derailment like this, there's going to be a calling for more regulation. I guess we'll see where it goes for rail.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
The NTSB chair who said that, you know, everything that they investigated could have been prevented.
Mm-hmm.
What does that actually mean?
Yeah,
because there's a cost benefit analysis to everything that is done.
Mm-hmm.
And,
sure.
And if you slowed down, for example, automobile accidents, mm-hmm. you could have a lot. I mean, every single automobile accident could be prevented.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Somebody makes a mistake, or there's an equipment failure, or a tire is, you know, is blown, and you know something was dropped on the street, and the tire was. If that thing wasn't on the street, then the tire wouldn't have blown.
Mm-hmm.
What exactly does that mean that every accident could be prevented?
I think that's her point: is that there are a number of things that are involved in every accident.
Right. Top of the hour news is brought to you by Howe's Products. Visit howesproducts.com.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the planet, we're Red Eye Radio. Welcome. Good morning. Download our Red Eye Radio app today. Listen when and where you want if you can't listen live overnight. All right, so just want to play the important part of NTSB Chair Jennifer Hamady yesterday and what they initially believe is the cause of the train derailment in Ohio, and Jake Tapper had asked her about the EC brake system that you had Buttigieg bring up very, very early. Well, not very early. Very early when he decided to cover the topic.
Yeah.
You know, the things that he and everybody knew it from the beginning, because as soon as he said it, he was fact-checked. We fact-checked him, and it was easy to do so Because when we first saw it, what he had said, we simply went to the NTSB website. And there it was right there. And this is a couple days after that they believe that it was overheated wheel bearings. It had nothing to do with the ECP brakes. And so he was using that in a bad political way. But he asked that question to the chair of the NTSB.
But for this investigation and for this derailment, ECP brakes would not have prevented the derailment. The wheel bearing failed on car number 23. So even with ECP brakes, the derailment would have occurred, the fire would have ensued, and the five vinyl chloride tank cars would still have to be vented and burned.
So it wouldn't have made a difference.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not doubting what she said when I'd said earlier on. I said, I'd love to ask her the question where she said every accident they've ever investigated could have been prevented.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I think I have watched every single episode of When Airplanes Crash.
Mm-hmm.
Not because, I'm a weird kind of person, but I love how the NTSB works. They are probably, when you think about it, one of the few federal government agencies that has not been completely and totally politicized. Their answers are in engineering terms.
Mm-hmm.
They have a history of having people with investigative mindsets. What caused it? And when you see how many airplane accidents in the past have been because of pilot error, it's really, I mean, you're shocked.
Yeah, pilot error, human error. There was one where they did not shut a door properly, did not set the pressurization didn't happen because of the setting on the door. They didn't close the door properly. Somebody on the ground. And, you know, and a number of things, you know, and she went on to say, look, it's, she talked about it could be through regulation or policy or a number of things going forward, but it's too early to say. If you look at the nature of what NTSB does, that's what they do. They bring about and then the investigation, and from the investigation suggest that, you know, okay, this needs to change. This part of whatever the process is or whatever the equipment is needs to change. And that happens with every accident. Here's the recommended change. And so you build better. In this case, could it changing the sensors on the warning system, on the overheating of the axle, by that time it was too late. By the time the crew was alerted, and she was pretty clear that she does not put this on the crew.
Yeah, the crew did everything they were supposed to
because
do.
Because they didn't get the alert until late. And so then my question would be, okay, then the other sensors along the track as this part of the equipment is heating up, do you set those sensors lower? What technology is available to do that, right? And how quickly does it get to a point of heating up? You know, when the bearings go and the axle starts to heat up, then how fast is that process? Could it happen between sensors where it's, you know, it happened so quickly, it wasn't going to be detected? All of these things, and then you get into the building of the equipment. All this is exactly what the NTSB does. And so it is to say that they're there to do a job, to investigate why it happened, and then bring about change to prevent it from happening again.
When you look at the NTSB and how many, for example, looking at, because they're most known for airplane crashes.
Right.
And they're involved in other things, but they're most known for airplane crashes. And as has been stated many times, when it's an engineering malfunction, they fix it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so all the planes have to go in and get whatever they need to get done. They get done.
Mm-hmm.
So now you've got hundreds of thousands of parts, you know, in an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have, they say every single accident, airplane accident, makes the airline industry safer because of the NTSB.
Yep.
Because they fix that problem and fix that problem and fix that problem and fix that problem.
Yep.
And you think about it, I can't remember the last commercial airline crash right now. I don't even know. Normally you would know, okay, the one, I'm going back, oh, the one 6 months ago, the one 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the last major airline crash.
Right.
And, you know, you say to yourself, okay, the combination of technology. I mean, it's amazing when you look at now. I mean, just the radar that detects the storm bursts, the thunderstorm bursts.
Right.
I can't think of the name of the radar.
Yeah.
But you see it when you go into DFW Airport. It's like a flat thing sitting right there.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see those things happening anymore. They stay away.
Right.
What do you call it? The microbursts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From
right.
It.
Right.
You don't see those accidents anymore.
Right.
And they were, when you think about how many just that I remember in the 60s, the 70s, I remember the one here at DFW.
Mm-hmm.
And I was watching it the other day and they had I can't remember what it was. Oh, it was New Orleans. It was that New Orleans airplane crash in the 70s that took off and went right into the neighborhood. And that was a microburst that brought it down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the new radar would catch it these days.
Right.
And so, you know, that's something that has come out of technology and the avoidance of those particular areas.
That's that's it. That's the point of everything is 100% preventable. So you can take what you learn and prevent it from happening again with technology and changes. And those are the things that we measure, during COVID.
Doppler radar.
Doppler, yeah. The entire, idea of assessing our own risk went out the door during COVID. It was like, okay, we'll hand it over to, government officials and other people to tell us what risk we're going to take. And it seemed to be, for too many people, the willingness to sit down and just wait for somebody to tell them they could move again. Well, we take risks every single day. Countless people get on planes, and countless, even more, get in a car, which is far more dangerous.
Well, look, and when she says, every accident can be prevented, and I'll never forget when I was in driver education, and the driver ed teacher told me, if you do what you're supposed to do every time you get in the car, you should never, ever get into an accident.
Right.
If you're paying full attention.
Mm-hmm.
Well, people don't. But you could make cars a lot safer, but there's a cost benefit and a real world analysis. For example, there's no reason, speed. I would like to see the statistics of, speed. If all cars went 10 miles an hour, how many people would die inside an automobile?
Well, if all people did, as your instructor said, what they're supposed to do.
Right, exactly. If everybody did what they're supposed to do.
It's preventable.
But if you decrease, well, the reason that, if I bring up decreased speed, not that it's ever going to happen. People don't be ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. The real world.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not about people not dying. Mm-hmm. It's about the fact that the masses want convenience. And I want to be able to go exactly 70 miles an hour. I never go 74 or 75. I want to make that known to any law enforcement.
I never go that slow.
Who might pull me over on the way home.
Mm-hmm.
But going 70 miles an hour, you're actually safer if you're going 55.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, people like going 70. I like going 70 because I get home a lot quicker.
Mm-hmm.
And it may only be 5 or 6 or 7 minutes in the drive that I have, but it's like, oh, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I get in an automobile accident and I get severely injured, I'll say, well, I don't like the speed.
Mm-hmm.
But for the reality is, I do like it. And that's, you know, that's the real world. So anything you can totally decrease the number of people who die in accidents and accidents in general. But it's the cost-benefit analysis that people initially like this will say, well, that doesn't mean anything, but it does if, you know, it skyrockets through the roof. For example, the cost-benefit of analysis of the Democrats of saving the world in climate change. Mm-hmm. But we're trying to save the world. Costs shouldn't matter. Mm-hmm. Well, there's great doubts as to whether they're saving the world.
Yeah, because they're not bringing evidence like an NTSB would.
No, they're not. They're not bringing the evidence. But even the people that believe it, because that's the point, the people that believe that the world is coming to an end, very few are willing to pay the cost to do it. And that's the reality. You know, on air, when you look at any type of engineering designs, if you inspected planes every week or every day fully, you'd probably lower, you know, the number of crashes or accidents based on anything engineering in a plane. Mm-hmm. Or any faulty thing that happened in the manufacturing process that they missed. But the fact is, the cost-benefit analysis isn't there to inspect it all the time. Because airplane costs, you know, to get on a flight would go through the roof. Mm-hmm. And then people wouldn't like it. And so convenience, being comfortable, let's be honest. Every radio and every huge sound system should be taken out of every car.
Well, I mean, the every city on the planet, I can say in the States, has a no texting while driving law.
Yeah.
And, but you can, you know, you can look at your GPS. You can look at your screen. You can look at your dash. You can look down. You can, and you know, this is where, and I think to her point, you could apply this. Now, this isn't NTSB recommendation, but the OEMs of cars, what have they done? Well, okay, now they have projected a lot of the dash activity up to the windshield, you know, the lower part of the windshield, so you can monitor things without having to move your head in a big way and take your eyes off the road. You know, there are a number of things that technologies that have been implemented. These elements have been implemented and features have been implemented into, you know, not just cars and planes, but big rigs and everything else. A lot of what we see with fully automated autonomous vehicles, they're already here. And by the way, have been here for a while. But those technologies, the features are implemented into the vehicles we drive that aren't fully automated. And so you get a warning system, lane departure, you know, rear camera, all this, and your vehicle basically sees what's going on or shows you what's going on. And these are all of the things that we look and you know, that's the idea. I think the NTSB takes a look at it and says, okay, here's what we have. We're, you know, this is the evidence, and then applies it to us. Basically, as a traveling public, what are going to be the norms and demands for travel, right? For going places, transportation, and then you apply that and say, okay, these are the trends, and this is what we see, and this is how we make it safer. I think it's fascinating, and it is very scary. There's a YouTube channel that is dedicated to recreating with the simulator. They use the flight simulator software, mm-hmm. but they recreate plane crashes and go back to the reports and then at the end and tell you what change was brought about as a result of what they learned about that particular crash.
Yep, that's, yep.
And those are things that, you know, that's what is great, is that we have people that are very skilled. The NTSB is the top in the world at what they do.
One more thing on convenience and cost benefit analysis. Remember that the laws that were passed for not having a cell phone to your ear.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everybody now has, mm-hmm. every modern car has a speakerphone.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between holding your phone to your ear and having the speakerphone is hardly any difference at all.
Mm-hmm.
So there's accidents are still being caused by people being on their phones.
Mentally distracted.
Mentally distracted.
You're not watching it. Did I just go through a red light or not?
It's having the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But the imagery of holding the phone convinced politicians all across the entire United States to ban you from doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's really not much of a difference between that and a speakerphone, but they know the public won't go for no speakerphones in the car.
Right.
So, again, that's the real world and the cost-benefit analysis, you know, that on anything that probably could save a lot of lives, as could speed. Everybody go 40 miles an hour.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, everybody beyond go 30 what the NTSB does, yeah. That's the policymakers reacting emotionally to a public that doesn't want to give up their phones. Yeah, which is ridiculous.
Right. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Most owner-operators leased to larger carriers are paid on a per-mile basis or a percentage of revenue per load. The per-mile basis is most prevalent among larger fleets, percentage at smaller. Pay per mile tends to dominate discussions about pay just because it's easier to measure, and pay per mile often is wrongly used as the deciding factor in leasing to a carrier. While pay per mile can be a vital factor, it's not a cure for every ill. Nor does it mean a big settlement check is coming an owner-operator's way. Why? Because pay per mile always must be considered in balance with gross revenue as well as total costs. Gross revenue can include flat mileage pay that varies by length of haul, percentage revenue pay, and more. Most importantly, though, for every revenue dollar generated, only part of that dollar is profit. But for every extra dollar of cost saved, the entire dollar contributes to profit. Knowing and understanding your cost to operate is fundamental to understanding the true value of any pay package. Owner-Operator Business 101 is provided by Shell Rotella. Shell Rotella, with advanced synthetic technology, is designed to help keep your rig running with more mileage and less maintenance.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Cronin. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Coming up here, the Rolling Stone magazine article that cancel culture is good for democracy. You know what I love about the left? If you can't argue a point, change the definition of what cancel culture is and then say it's good for democracy.
Right, yeah.
This is so, my gosh, this is kindergarten mentality, but we'll hit that and more coming up.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
Judge's decision was based on finding there is a
likelihood. So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
On your smart speaker, say, play Red Eye Radio. And if you're really nice, she might. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. This article's actually pretty hilarious here from Rolling Stone, a guy by the name of Ernst Owens. Why cancel culture is good for democracy.
Mm.
For many years, cancel culture has been despised or misconstrued as a new phenomenon that's causing havoc on free speech expression and speech. We're supposed to now assume that we can't say or do anything without an angry mob instantly judging us and preparing to end our careers before they start. In actual fact, we are the people who make up the so-called mob, and we have control of our own actions. Cancel culture has leveled the playing field for those who can't always rely on the government to protect them. Right now, bigots are protected under the First Amendment to fuel disgusting rhetoric without state-sanctioned consequence. The America that tolerated white supremacy in their policies, which was the Democratic Party, by the way, and laws, is the same country that wants to remind us how such forms of hate are still legal via free speech. Cancel culture is a poison to those in power that have benefited from unchecked free speech. When conservatives on Fox News declare that it's a free country and that cancel culture is un-American, they forget that speech works two ways. It allows for discourse to take place, but grants all voices can be heard. In other words, straight white men and other people with power aren't used to getting pushback for the ways that they conduct themselves, and cancel culture has reset the way society can react. Those who fear cancel culture may claim they fear suppression of speech, but it's accountability that they want to avoid. Oh, boy, I can't wait to have fun with this here.
Mm-hmm.
When British media personality Piers Morgan publicly attacked Meghan Markle on a March 21 episode of Good Morning Britain, he didn't expect the immediate backlash or that he'd soon be exiting the show. Morgan slammed Markle for seeming to criticize the royal family and complaining about the bigotry she faced within the family and from the British press. Many viewed Morgan's comments as insensitive to Markle's mental health and racially insensitive, given often the racist coverage she'd face from British tabloids as a black woman. The station had received over 57,000 complaints regarding Morgan's comments from disappointed viewers, including one from Markle herself. Public pressure is speculated to have played a role in Morgan abruptly leaving Good Morning Britain. Cancel culture, as we consider it today, feels new because of the digital platforms we have at our disposal. Previous generations were canceling, but the road to accountability was paved with many barriers, both technologically and socially. It was hard to fully cancel something when you weren't granted the same civil rights as your opponent, even more so when you could face even more persecution and exile for doing it. Once the internet began to take off in the 1990s, society began to see a shift in how the public could consider canceling with less gatekeeping. Those who fear cancel culture claim that they fear suppression of speech, but it's accountability they want to avoid. That's the second time that they put that in there. So he continues with that and on the exact same narrative. Now, as we have stated before, slavery was wrong. And because if Jim Crow laws were wrong, and the fact that you didn't have the power to speak, you now have the power to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Both sides have the power to speak, and both sides have a media platform that will promote them. To compare and say that, as we have said many, and if you listen to this show, we're conservative / libertarian. We believe that the Democratic Party and the policies that they promote are insane, and we explain precisely why. We don't do it in generalities. When we say the other side is race baiting and involved in racist activities, we back it up with precise debate points. When you look at somebody like Ben Shapiro, Ben Shapiro is not racist and or anti-Semitic in any way, because it seems like he's using the race argument here as the totality of his argument. Ben Shapiro doesn't do it. Most people who call themselves conservative that are mainstream, which means they have a big audience, and have been the victims of the cancel culture, are promoting individuality and autonomy. They disagree with the left, who is all about bigotry and racism based on their identity politics and their insistence on judging people by groups and not individuals. The conservative side that is canceled the most because conservatives, we don't want to cancel anybody. Somebody I was talking to somebody the other day who said, oh, they should take Don Lemon off CNN. He's an embarrassment. I said, well, that's their decision. I don't want him off. I don't want any liberal to be silenced. We've talked about this many times before. It's the last thing we want.
I think it's probably the last thing CNN wants. He's the only thing anyone is talking about at CNN.
But if Piers Morgan gets let go for something that he has said on the air, that's always existed. The cancel culture is when you say, we don't want to allow a person to speak in any public forum. That's different than a private company, for whatever reason, stating, nah, that's not the direction we want to go. Nah, we don't like, that's happened on music stations. We don't like your morning show. It's too mean.
Or we don't like your morning show because it doesn't have any listeners.
Yeah, exactly. That would be another reason. It's too mean, and that does it, and advertisers don't want it. That's a different ball game. It's a different ball game than wanting to forcibly, through violence, stop somebody from speaking on public property when they have a permit to do so, and everybody, irrespective of their political affiliation, has been invited to that public place. It is not about being afraid of accountability. The people that actually don't want, it's about the fact that the left, and he knows this, he's not stupid, Mr. Owens knows this, it's the fact that the left doesn't want to have to explain to the public precisely what they believe. And it's conservatives that are calling them out.
Well, and what Owens is doing here, too, is also starting on the wrong premise and on a couple of points. And I've said for years that when you start on the wrong premise, that everything beyond that may sound logical, but it's still wrong. And this idea that, well, hate speech is protected. Well, what is their definition? What is his definition of hate speech? Would it be the stand-up routines of a Dave Chappelle? Because that's the cancel culture.
Yes.
He came out and used and talked about biology. He's a comedian. But they wanted him gone. They wanted his livelihood to end. And that is the cancel culture. It is any, not just dissent, but thought that isn't theirs, thought that does not belong in their agenda, should be shut down. And people should have their livelihood taken from them.
He writes here, the potential for cancel culture is democracy uncensored and unchained. Despite how critics have tried to represent it, cancel culture is not cyberbullying or doxing. Of course it is.
Yes, it is.
This is where he changes the definition of cancel culture in order to make his point.
I'll just make it up as I go along.
Liberals do all the time. We're going to change the definition of that particular word.
Right.
Woman, we can't define it anymore. Right. Cancel culture gives us a chance to engage in new and exciting ways. No, it doesn't.
No.
It does the opposite.
No.
And we believe the cancel culture exists because the left knows they can't win the argument in the arena of ideas with the people if challenged by conservatives to say, tell us exactly how you believe, for example. And when they have opened up over the last couple of years, as we have seen, a biological male can be a biological male because, or biological female because he says so. Mm. Everybody knows that's idiocy.
Right.
And so what did they do to do it? They bully people into the fact that if you don't agree with this, as we saw, you want the cancel culture? The cancel culture has affected the left. You think those swimmers for the Ivy League are conservative libertarians?
Right.
The women? And many have said, we're liberal, but this is insane.
Antifa showing up at the door of Tucker Carlson at his home? You know, these are the things that, because what he's trying to do here is say that cancel culture is simply dissent. It's simply opposing view, and it's coming from the perspective of the side that is wanting to shut down dissent of any kind.
I know.
What he's trying to say is, no, cancel culture is simply dissent and opposition in opinion. Yeah.
Right.
No, it is not.
As if cancel culture is the fact that conservatives don't want the other side to be heard.
Right.
I mean, it's completely posterior backwards.
No, he took,
and he knows it.
He took, in fact, he took the entire wave of the pushback against cancel culture and tried to pretend it was their side and that's their position and that they're the ones that are not looking to do any harm. When you're looking to shut down anything and everything from a comedian's livelihood to opposing views on a channel they don't even watch, then that is cancel culture.
Look, we talked about the president of the United States. And every single Democratic major leader, without any objection from any Democrat, lying about the Georgia election law.
I was just about to
create
that.
To create racial division and hatred based on a lie.
Mm-hmm.
As we have stated before, that's what KKK leaders did.
Mm-hmm.
If Mr. Owens knows anything about history, that's what white supremacist groups did. They lied about something to cause hatred between the races based on a lie. That's what the president did. We have never called, even though we find it despicable, we have never called for that type of horrendous, despicable speech to be banned.
No.
Because we want people to know exactly where the president of the United States and the Democratic leadership and the mainstream of the Democratic Party, what they believe. We don't want them to shut up. We want them to promote their bigotry and their hatred
and their
stereotyping.
And from the president on down, the entire party got on board. Major League Baseball got on the board.
Yep.
Got on board to the point that they canceled the All-Star game and moved it to another state.
Yes. And hurt hundreds of black businesses.
Yep.
In Atlanta.
Right.
They didn't care.
No, they didn't.
All that mattered was the lie.
And the law, voters, including black voters in Georgia, are okay with. They're okay with the law.
Yeah.
Nobody had any complaints.
Not one rating that the last election was poor from there were more. Whites were like almost 1%.
Mm-hmm.
There was 0%, not one black voter in the analysis from the University of Georgia.
Right.
Afterward, not one could they find who said their experience was poor.
That's cancel culture.
And we know voting was through the roof.
Right.
And so the other thing is what Mr. Owens doesn't talk about is the end game. And we've seen the end game in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen the end game in California.
Right.
If you don't use what we tell you to do, we'll put you in jail. If you don't use the precise language, that's also part of the cancel culture. Not only must you not speak this way, but if you do, we will put you
in
jail.
And Owens implies that with talking about hate speech being protected. That implies he believes that it shouldn't be, which means he believes there should be laws against speech.
Yep. But they weren't promoting hate speech.
Nope.
They were promoting biological truth. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So it's interesting that even on cancel culture, and this is something that we have said, the left cannot tell the American public what they really feel. They have for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had to start, as we see in the Biden administration, they're backing off, and now they're lying about what cancel culture is.
Yeah.
is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome. Good morning. Thank you so much for being here. Download our Red Eye Radio app today if you can't listen live overnight, which, of course, is the preferred method. Because then you're with us and we feel like we have company. But if not, you can listen when and where you want on our podcast, which is our show, and our show, which is our podcast.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
And thank you.
All right. I'm still laughing at the headline that got no publicity this week. Joe Manchin announces he's not running for president. That's nobody cared about that. No,
nobody was asking. He holds a press conference. I just want to announce that I am not running for president. Does anyone have any questions? Yeah, was anybody actually asking you to run for president?
All right. Now,
no.
This is almost as good as, and we have talked about the evolution of, you know, illegal immigration. That it went from illegal immigration to undocumented immigrant, to immigrant, and then tested for a very short time in California. What was it? Temporary displaced traveler.
That's right.
Now there's a new one.
Oh.
And we have to thank Justin Trudeau, Prime Minister of Canada, for coming up with this. He says he and Joe Biden will discuss stemming the flow of irregular migration into Canada when the president visits Ottawa next month.
All right.
Irregular migration.
Okay. Because he can't say illegal, can he?
No.
Well, let me ask him. Is it legal?
Well,
migration?
I believe Justin Trudeau should know that even using the term irregular migration, that is still xenophobic.
Yes.
And we want to make that clear. That's well, so, by the Democrat, right. By the Democrat liberal standard, I want to make that clear.
That's right, right, yes. Right. Well, you know, keep Canada, Canada, you know. That's what I always say.
For our friends up north listening, that's what Vice President Harris called Canada a couple of weeks ago, Canada, just in case you didn't hear that. Mm. We know you're Canadian, but it was...
Wasn't it Jean-Pierre that said that?
Oh, Jean-Pierre.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. She may have said it, too.
No, you're right.
Harris may have said that at some point, too.
It was Jean-Pierre.
Yeah.
Thank you for correcting me.
Yeah.
All right, we were talking about the cancel culture and more, the Rolling Stone article. I want to go to this call here. We go to Brandon in Longview, Washington. Brandon, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Well, how you doing? I love listening to you guys. You guys make me chuckle every night. Thank you very much for what you do.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you.
Hey, quick question for you. Everywhere I hear, I live in Washington State, so this is an incredibly liberal state. And I've kind of noticed with the whole liberal everything out there, all they have is words. You know, that's it. And I kind of put up to the analogy of a mother having a child in a Walmart, and the child's throwing a fit. The mother can either turn around and coddle the child and play into the fit, or she can walk away, and the child will finally realize that, you know, the fit isn't working, and it'll shut up, and it'll figure it out. Do you think that might be the way to counter the whole leftist hate mongering and everything they do?
Well, before we get there, let you know that I love Longview, Washington. When I lived in Portland, golfed a lot at Three Rivers. Three Rivers Golf Course. Had dinner one night at the Longview Country Club. played Lewis River a lot, played Tri Mountain down on 5 as you head to Portland. So a lot of great golf in Washington State. I would say,
yeah.
And for the record, I don't like your state at all.
Well, that came out of nowhere.
That's why I've never been there, and I'm not going.
I have to tell you too. I'm just the story of Mount St. Helens made it so. As an adult now, if I could have had other choices as a profession, would have been a basketball coach because I love basketball. Yeah. Or because of Mount St. Helens, a geologist. I can't tell you. Now, I lived in Portland from 97 to 2000. So I spent a lot of time hiking the mud flows of Mount St. Helens. And you go to the Johnston Observatory there, and you look into the crater. Mm. And I'm like, I don't need to go anywhere. And I don't need to go anywhere to see any other site when you look into the crater of Mount St. Helens.
Yeah. By the way, the reporting on that, legendary reporting by none other than Lars Larson on that back then, in the day.
Yeah,
he was a TV reporter.
Yeah, Lars.
And did excellent work.
Lars did great. And in my house, when you walk into my house, the picture that you walk in the front room is a black and white picture of Mount St. Helens taken by Roger Wirth, who I still believe is a photographer for the Longview newspaper. Yeah. And I was in a charity function. I can't remember what the charity was. I know it was for kids. I can't remember what it was. And you could bid for this picture. And I bid hundreds of dollars for it and didn't win the bid. Somebody bid above me.
Oh.
But I kept my donation and donated it.
Mm.
A month later, I'm sitting at home and this big package comes. And he signed it, the picture. And it's one of the most, probably internationally, it's the one picture that was everywhere.
Mm.
A complete frame picture. He said, I heard you put in your donation anyway, even though you didn't win the bid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here's the picture, and that's one of my prized possessions. But let me tell you this about.
I remember I was.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was 10 years old when Mount St. Helens blew up, and I watched the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Camas.
Oh, okay,
the whole thing, and when the ash came down, to this day, I still have a big bottle of ash that I scraped off our car, and it's in a big glass milk container. Mm-hmm. That I've had ever since May 1980.
Wow!
And it's sitting in my house. It's never moved. My piece of history.
Wow!
And, it's very memorable.
Yeah. As to your question, I would say no. And the reason I say that is from personal experience. The left, for example, talked about the systemic racism in police departments. They followed Black Lives Matter, and there was a wall of intimidation that nobody speak in any way. Companies got behind it. Sports leagues got behind it. The only group of people that really did not get behind it and exposed that lie and what Black Lives Matter was about really on the forefront was conservative talk radio challenging it every day and papers like the New York Post and the National Review, New York Post, and a Wall Street Journal opinion page were really the only ones in the country that didn't buy into that lie. So I would say, no, you never shut up. On the liberal transgender activist movement, Eric and I have been talking about this and said how it would destroy liberal feminism for 10 years. We've been warning that this is coming. Critical race theory, identity politics, where it would lead. It's been conservative talk radio that's been on the lead of never shutting up about it. And then, for example, on the liberal transgender activist movement, as Eric and I were talking about it, because when we saw what you wanted to talk about, Eric, you brought up, you know, Dave Chappelle and how Dave Chappelle really brought that in to the mainstream of America. And now when the discussion comes up and you explain what critical race theory is, when you explain what the liberal transgender activist movement, you have landslide numbers of people against it. So, no, I think you have to challenge their insanity.
And one thing that I think, Brandon, that you left out of your example, your analogy with a parent and an unruly child in a store, one option that you didn't bring up for that parent is discipline. And these are the things, and you know, it doesn't have to be corporal punishment. Discipline is done, in fact, I believe, not just once, every once in a while, but it discipline, that tone of discipline, it should be every day. I mean, that's kind of the idea of the word. And so when you apply that here, We're not, by the way, suggesting that we go spank any liberals. That's, I mean, not whatever you're into, but, you know, consensual. Consensual only.
Yes.
Consensual only.
Consensual only.
But I'm just saying. But what the idea is that, and in this regard, it would be the discipline is to not stand down, to not ignore it. Now, that's not to say that you have to engage every single time. But right. I had this conversation with some relatives just this past weekend, and it was, you know, things are so crazy. What do you, you know, and being the talk show host in the family, of course, you know, I'm conducting my own talk show there in the living room at the beach house, and we're just all, we're having this conversation. Because a lot of people, you know, just want to, and rightly so, go about their daily lives, and they get along with people. They love people. They don't have any enemies. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they hear about all this crazy stuff. There is a lot of stuff that you can ignore. There is a lot of the chatter on social media that honestly doesn't apply to all of us in our day to day lives. But when it comes to the movement itself, it should be addressed. And there are ways to address it. And I think we're seeing a lot of that come back at the far left. And that's the discipline that is required. And I think in terms of government, Governor DeSantis in Florida is one of those who is greatly disciplined in not standing down. In terms of pop culture, the aforementioned Dave Chappelle is another. So these are you know, you because Chappelle is very clear if you watch the entire series of stand-ups that he's done on Netflix. About his position and who he is as a person, and you know what he means by all of this. And look, first and foremost, he's up there to make people laugh. If you don't think it's funny, you don't have to watch it. But beyond that, it is, you know, people wanting to take his livelihood, and people so angry at him, you know, to the point that at the comedy festival he was actually charged on stage by an individual. But these are, you know, but when you look at the pushback also from the stand-up comedy community, I've never said that in that phrase, but they really are a community of comics. Those guys are all friends. They, you know, they kind of hang out and they help each other because a lot of them work together very closely. And, you know, if one is to fall, Dave Chappelle is a giant. So if the giant is to fall, well, then what is next? If they were to get Dave Chappelle off Netflix or off the stage or whatever, then where do they go next? Well, they're going to take on Jamie Foxx, or they're going to take on Seinfeld or Bill Burr. And next, the very, relatively speaking, a guy who doesn't delve into a lot of issues at all, Nate Bargatze or Brian Regan, you know, these guys that, you know, kind of are into the self-deprecating thing and talking about their personal lives and bringing that in a humorous way. These are all, you know, I mean, anything would be in within the scope of the target. And the fact of the matter is that ultimately all they're trying to do is make people laugh. Chappelle's been doing it since he was a teenager. His dad drove him to stand up when he was a kid. What he does requires great discipline, which he has practiced over the years, but he's going to do it his way, and you're not going to shut him down, and he shouldn't be shut down whether you agree with him or not. He should never be shut down. So that's
true to freedom of speech.
Yep. And that's what it requires. And we always have to defend it. And, you know, and there are so many ways to do that and also practice that free speech every day. Brandon, we appreciate it. Thank you so much for calling. We appreciate your call. But, you know, I think that's really what it comes down to is that
let's
the
go,
discipline,
Brandon.
You know? Yeah, exactly. Woohoo! I can get that on a t-shirt. But, yeah, great call. You know, I think that's what, you know, sometimes it feels like, oh, man, I just want to turn it off. And again, in terms of the stuff on social media, you can, you know, that's not a bad thing to turn something like that off. But as a society, we should reject any person or group that is looking to go to the point that any dissent should be outlawed. They keep in mind, they are labeling many things as hate speech, and even true hate speech is protected by the First Amendment. And it's because, and frankly, you and I talk about it. I want to know how people think. I want to know who people are, right, and whether it's a hate group, a true hate group, or the political opposition. I want to know how people think. I want to know what they're proposing. I want to know these things, and the First Amendment allows them to verbalize that.
We'll talk more, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls, 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
In Red Eye Radio, he's Eric Carlin, and I'm Gary McNamara. To Brandon, our last caller, the other thing is, I think not only should we not ignore the left ever, but I think we should be on the offense much more. We shouldn't allow conservatives, libertarians should never allow themselves to be on the defensive, especially mm-hmm. when it comes to areas like race. You know, we talked about that on every major issue, the left can't tell you the truth about how they really believe, because they have for a while. And the public has found out about what they really want to do, and the public's rejected it. So you see on, for example, on the border. Well, okay, the border, it's secure. They can't tell you what's really going on down there because they know the American public won't agree with it. Defund the police. We know they wish to defund the police. Then when it started backfiring on them, they reverse. But we know they actually do wish to defund the police and could if they could get public support for that. We know their energy policy is insane, and we believe now it's time to take them to task and be on the offense much more, as we have been for the longest time on race. For the longest time, they've been calling conservatives racist.
Yeah, right.
And that is so untrue when you see, because it's so obvious, blunt. Identity politics is what they believe. They judge people by groups and not individuals, and they defend it in critical race theory.
Yeah.
And now judging people by groups is anti-racism, instead of judging them as autonomous human beings and judging them by the character, their character, and, as we have stated, because we do talk radio, the substance of their argument and their ability to tell the truth or not tell the truth. And so, no, it's time on race to attack. And that's why we do that, because they are the ones that have succeeded in calling conservatives racist for the longest time, and enough conservatives has not spoke up about it, and now they are, because of critical race theory. Now when it's in our schools, now when parents are finally doing it, conservatives in talk radio were doing it, but not overall.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, no, we should be as, when I say loud, I mean aggressive in promoting the points that are irrefutable,
yeah,
that are self-evident to people, that easily exposes the lies of the left.
Well, and it's the difference between being reactive and proactive. When you talk about engaging, when you engage on their terms, you're going to make a mistake every time. That in and of itself is a mistake. When you engage in your own on your own terms, and this is something that I think Governor DeSantis does very well. It's not that he doesn't engage, but he doesn't do it. He doesn't go down the rabbit hole and chase the topic of a question. And well, you know, if you look at the bill, it doesn't actually say don't. No, he shuts it down. The bill doesn't say that, and you know it. And controlling that conversation, because, you know, the question is thrown at him, or questions are thrown at him all the time, and he addresses it directly. So he engages on his own terms. That's important.
The IRS, the world's most aggressive collection agency. They can seize your property, bank account, and garnish your wages. They cause sleepless nights for millions of Americans. Don't be one of them. If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS or state, get protected.
The Bonus Show.
It's Red Eye Radio. We're Red Eye Radio. Red Eye Radio is not an it's. I said it's Red Eye Radio. We're Red Eye Radio.
This is Red Eye Radio.
Yes. All right. Let's look at the latest polling.
Okay.
Amazing that it took this long to come out. Most voters believe that President Biden's administration moved too slowly in taking down the Chinese spy balloon. Initially.
Hmm.
Let me just get it to it here. Hang on. Yeah, I hate when I print something, when I read it online and then I print it, and then you look at it and it's like, why doesn't it print the story when it looks like it's going to print the story?
Yeah.
We'll, okay. Here it is. Okay, I've got it now. The this was a Harvard Caps Harris survey found. The according to the survey, 79% heard about the Air Force taking down the Chinese surveillance balloon. And most believe it to be a challenge to U.S. sovereignty by China. 79%, they believe it's an espionage threat and was a threat to commercial traffic as well. A majority ...63% of voters believe the Biden administration acted too slowly in taking down the balloon. Okay, I get it now. 79%. Said it was a challenge to U.S. sovereignty by China, an espionage threat, and a threat to commercial aircraft. A majority, 63% of voters, believe the Biden administration acted too slowly in taking down the balloon, compared to 37% who believe the administration acted in a measured way. A plurality of voters also believe that that the Secretary of State canceling his trip to China was not enough. The survey also asked about the other unidentified aerial objects that have since been spotted and taken down. Most, 59%, believe those are also Chinese spy balloons. And 82% support a congressional investigation into the matter.
Ah.
82%.
Okay.
77% also support taking punitive action on China due to the communist country's latest move. Biden last Thursday, however, cast doubt on the idea, contending likely balloons were not tied to Chinese surveillance. I wonder if you measured people from today, what they would think. I don't know exactly when this poll was taken. I don't have it here in front of me, so I don't know, because that would be important as to when precisely it was taken. So, and they just say the latest poll, but they don't have a link to the actual survey. It does show one thing, though: the vast majority of Americans don't believe what the White House was telling them.
Yeah. Right. And, you know,
and that's not a conservative pollster.
And look, we can look back at it and say, all right, this time it was just this spy balloon. And by the way, that's only based on what we have been told. And we don't know what kind of data they have been able to gather, what information they got from that. But let's just say that it was a benign situation. I don't believe it was. But even if it were, you have to learn from it. And the biggest lesson here is that this administration, this president, is not in control. He doesn't have the ability to govern. And over again, we see the demonstration of that.
Let me just say that the poll was taken, ended 8 days ago. Mm. So it's an old poll.
Mm-hmm.
I just found it. So, and so, yes, I can understand 8 days ago,
because
they started 10 days ago and finished it 8 days ago. So I can see people at that point still wondering whether the others were, because the president didn't say till last Thursday,
right.
which is 7 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
So the poll looks like the poll was done by the time the president came out and said, and the officials came out and said, well, we don't believe it's a Chinese balloon. So that's understandable why people said that.
Right.
And I'm going through they ask a ton of different questions here, and I'm trying to, I mean, this thing is, there's, looks like there's, oh, I don't know, 100 pages in this.
I would love to see a poll on, that gauges the sentiment of the people based on what they believe from this administration. Do they trust anything that Biden is telling them? Especially in geopolitical arenas, what is it that the American people believe and don't believe?
Okay,
now, we're engaged every single day on this front, but not everybody is. But I do wonder how many people believe. I mean, let's take this for example. We're told they weren't Chinese balloons. Do you believe what the administration is telling you?
All right, I have the actual polling here, so I found it. Have you heard or not heard about the U.S. Air Force taking down the Chinese surveillance balloon? And this was 8 days ago. 79% had, 21% had not. Where are those 21%? What world do they live in? How did you not know about the Chinese balloon? Because that went into pop culture.
Yeah, no, that was the first thing. When you said 79%.
Yes, that's why I had to check it to see. Do you consider the presence of these balloons a challenge to U.S. sovereignty by China? 66% yes, 17% no. 17%, I don't know. Do you consider this balloon an espionage threat? 65% yes, 18% no, 17% I don't know. A threat to commercial aircraft, 61% yes, 22% no, 17% I don't know. That shows you nobody. I mean, you only have, nobody is buying what the administration said at all. And that was 8 days ago. The Chinese surveillance balloon was known to be hovering over I'm reading the exact question. The Chinese surveillance balloon was known to be hovering over American skies for at least a week before it was shot down. Do you think that the Biden administration acted too slowly, or did they act in a measured way before taking it down? 63% too slowly, 37% acted in a measured way.
We always have questions for those individuals. Oh, no, that was measured.
Yeah, but many people that believe that answered it was in a measured way, a significant portion, from what I can see, close to half, if you look at the other numbers of that, at least half thought he acted in a measured way, but it was a threat to the United States.
Yeah, right.
If you take the polling, because they were polling the same people. They didn't poll different people on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which, again, brings about a lot of questions for those people.
Should the Biden administration disclose what it knows about these aerial objects it has shot down or not? 75% yes, 25% no. Wow. Then do you support or oppose the U.S. Congress investigating the use of surveillance balloons over American skies by China, as well as these other aerial objects that were shot down? 82% yes, 18% no. If these other downed aerial balloons are found to be Chinese surveillance balloons, should the United States take further punitive actions on China or go after all balloon clubs in the country? Yes, okay, I added that last part, okay? Mm-hmm. 77% yes, 23% no. I mean, you cannot get more landslide numbers. Seriously, you can't. In this when you think about it, in this tribal, polarized political society that we live in today, those are absolutely landslide numbers that tell you the American people do not buy anything that Karine Jean-Pierre or Biden are saying on this.
Yeah.
Or said on it.
Right.
Initially. In general, do you think China regularly spies or not on the U.S. government? 77% yes. 12% no. Who are these 12% that don't think that China regularly spies on us? Who are these people?
No, I mean, these are the groups we always want to talk to.
Do you think China regularly spies on the U.S. Congress? 70% yes. 15% no. U.S. businesses, 73% yes. Of course, because that would be, you're talking about corporate spying. 73% yeah. Yes, 14% no. Regular American, 61% yes, 22% no. Wow.
Well, when it comes to corporations, intellectual property rights, that's been an issue for a long time, so... their version of spying in that regard is stealing technology.
Yes.
Which requires yes. Right. you to find the technology first. You got to do the surveillance, and then you get it, and then you deconstruct it and make it your own.
Do you think Joe Biden is up to handling the challenges from China, Russia, and Iran? 56% not up to the job, 44% up to the job.
Oh.
Would Donald Trump be up to the job or not? Almost reversed. 54% yes, 46% no. But see, those are generalized political questions at that point.
Well, it is interesting that there is that much confidence in the current commander-in-chief. That's a lot. But again, it's as you point out, it's a political question. When you break down the issues, when you break down, look, you break down the botched exit of Afghanistan. And you had people that were otherwise screaming for years, we got to get out, we got to get out. That they were saying, and remember, there was a poll. We did it. Do you believe we should have kept some troops in Afghanistan? Yeah. Do you think we're going to have to go back eventually to Afghanistan because of the way that we got out of Afghanistan? Yeah, probably. And so when you break the ideas down, you know, and it's all going to be political, but when you break the ideas down, it's going to be separate than just the names of the people in charge or would-be people in charge.
You know, this is really interesting. They asked this question, should the United States relax oil and gas drilling regulation in order to provide European nations with short-term support as they cut their dependency on Russia oil and natural gas? They didn't ask about the United States,
right?
Just Europe.
Right.
49% of Democrats, yes. 27% no. 50% of Republicans, yes. 30% of Republicans, no. Unsure, 24% and 20%.
Mm.
Across the board, equal.
Yeah.
I wonder if you asked that question about the U.S.
Yeah.
Supplying it to the U.S.
That's a very different question, right?
But still, that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up from the top of the hour, I started looking, and we started this polling by looking at something, completely different, the Chinese spy balloon. But this latest poll from Harvard Caps also asked the question on Ukraine. And the polling here shows exactly what the problem is for the president in the future. We'll have this coming up.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across the USA and around this entire planet, we are Red Eye Radio. And we say the entire planet because you can listen to us on any of our great radio stations live, or if you can't do that, you can listen to our podcast, which is our show, which comes out early in the morning, each and every morning, and you can listen when and where you want. All right.
Yeah.
So, the problem that the president has with the war in Ukraine, and it's very simple. Americans have supported it the last year. The majority has, when you look at the latest, you look at the polling here. And the numbers that they use for assistance are not the total amount of assistance that we've given Ukraine. Right here it says, let me get to it here. The U.S. government has committed more than $27.1 billion in security assistance since the start of the 2022 war. Do you think this investment in Ukraine and the protection is justified? 64% said yes up to this point. 36% said no. Now, you've told me that the total assistance we've given, military and humanitarian, is $76 billion?
Yes. That's total military, financial, and humanitarian is $76.8 billion.
Right. So they're using the $27 billion number. And then they ask the question, do you think that protecting Ukraine's sovereignty and security is an investment in preserving global order or a massive waste of resources? Still, landslide numbers. An investment in global order, 60%, massive waste of resources, 40%.
Hmm.
That's up to this particular point. Now, here's the problem. And we talked about this yesterday. We're going to have to keep spending more and more and more. The amount we give Ukraine is not going down. It's going to go up. And it's not $27 billion. It's a lot more. In fact, for all of 2023, if this war continues at the pace that it does, I can see us spending over $100 billion.
Yeah.
So then this question is asked. Let me see. Would you support or oppose giving another $27 billion in aid to Ukraine in 2023, which is probably at the minimum one-fourth of what we will actually give? 53% oppose, 47% approve. You can already see the numbers degrading, the polling numbers degrading. Okay, it's for a year, but the problem has to be solved after a year or we need to get out. And if you actually told the American public the true numbers in the poll, what would they think?
Right.
And that's the problem because, as been pointed out, Russia doesn't just need to win the war outright. All they have to do is extend this thing out till Americans get sick of financing it, and then we slowly pull out.
No, it's a great point. And I think there's been some analysis over the last week because of the president's visit and the 1 year anniversary and all that. And that is, look, Putin, if his health is intact, he can wait it out. He can sit and wait it out. He doesn't need to withdraw troops. He doesn't, even if he does in certain areas of Ukraine, he can still wait it out. He still has very much the upper hand over Ukraine. And you're right, because my question is part of his tactic knowing that 2024 is going to change one way or the other. And maybe it's only temporary, but I don't think it is. But it's going to change the mindset and politically the actions of the administration in terms of the war against Ukraine with Russia. So Putin knows the election year is here. You know, as of this summer, everybody's going to be campaigning, and that's going to be the question. You have a president who prides himself in being the one who ended the war in Afghanistan. He botched the exit completely, but he prides himself. He looks at that as a victory. And the question that the American people, after, you know, you go a year helping Ukraine, we're not there. We don't have boots on the ground. It's not the same thing. But $78 billion, $78.6 billion is not a small amount of money. And if we're spending that in 1 year, how much would be needed going forward? And that's exactly what you're asking the American people.
Right.
And the American people are going to ask of this administration.
Because we go another year and a half and all this, and you keep saying more for Ukraine, more for Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
You already see the American public, again, the majority and big majorities are supporting it.
Yeah.
But that ends now.
Right.
Americans, the majority of Americans don't want to spend what we spent last year. And the figure's actually wrong. It's lowballed by over half as to what we've actually spent in the polling, and Americans are asked, would you still want to spend another $27 billion in 2023? All of a sudden it reverses. Nope. Americans don't want to spend the same amount of money, $27 billion, which we spent $76 billion last year.
Yeah.
They don't want to spend that this year. We'll probably spend over $100 billion this year
right
on Ukraine. And so another year and a half of spending another, let's hypothetically, $150 billion. Will Americans want to be in Ukraine at that point? When clearly they don't want to spend, they don't want to spend the money before it's spent. Now, a year is enough.
Right.
And sorry, but that's the way that the American public is on any type of war. If we can't end it in a year, just get out of it. I mean, that's what we did in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the war's gone on for too long. Yeah, but they're still fighting us. Well, whatever. We'll end the war. Well, you're not ending the war.
Right.
You're just retreating and allowing them to rebuild. No, the war isn't ended because they haven't ended it.
And Putin knows this about Biden. And he knows yep. about, you know, look, election year being a big impact on that. So wait it out. If his health allows, Putin has all the time in the world. He certainly can wait it out into 2024. He does not need to retreat and say, okay, we're done.
Well, and he knows, odds are, that if the American public is sick of it in a year and a half, it's going to be another negative for Biden.
Yeah, exactly.
Which means at that point, the Republican will read the poll and say, we don't want to do this anymore.
Right, right.
Putin wins.
Right. Yep.
And then the American public will say, well, why did we spend all that money if Russia ended up winning anyway?
Exactly.
And that's the problem because...
And by that right. time, who knows, you know, well, how much that could be.
Look, we already know what we're doing in Ukraine is not to give Ukraine the ability to win the war overall.
Right.
You know, you sit there and you think about Vietnam, where the criticism of Vietnam was, well, we weren't really trying to win.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in this case, are we trying to win with overwhelming force, which is how you try to win? No. No, we can't send planes. No, we can't do this. No, we can't get involved. We give them assistance, 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 assistance. But will that win the war? Well, it may delay the war for a couple of years, but will it end the final result?
Right.
Well, we're hoping that there'll be a coup in Russia. Well, that hasn't happened yet. Well, right. We're hoping that Putin will die. Well, that hasn't happened
exactly.
yet. Exactly. So you're not trying to win the war. Both sides are attempting to extend the war. But Putin knows that the American public is limited on their patience for spending money. It'll last a year, and then they want out. The polling shows it's exactly what it is right now.
Right.
That now a majority don't want to spend the money we spent last year in Ukraine. That the polling lowballed drastically by over half what we're actually spending, and still Americans don't want to spend. Americans don't want to spend half of what we spent on Ukraine last year. Now a majority do not. After a majority supported it last year, now they don't want to spend half of
right.
what we spent
right.
last year.
Right.
That's the problem that Biden has.
Right. And if they were given in these polls the real numbers, I wonder how much of that would change. If it would be even lower support
yep.
for helping Ukraine. And those are the things you have to look at. You know, I saw some analysis yesterday, and I don't know, again, who knows what's accurate, what's true, or what might be true long-term or come true down the road. But the analysis was that this person, being a foreign affairs and war, basically, expert, and was commenting and saying that if there were going to be a coup, we would have seen it by now. Now, again, I don't know what's used for justification. It was a very short conversation. But if there were going to be a coup against Putin, that would have already happened. And there's lots of rumors, especially lately, it's come back around, that he's sick and everything else.
But he appeared the other day.
You know, they've said this from the beginning, and you had the analysis, too, of, well, he doesn't look the same, he doesn't walk the same. That's been going on for a year now. You have to assume he's very okay, and there's not going to be a coup, and that he can wait it out until politically there is no support in the U.S., for assisting Ukraine. And then he goes in. Because if we're not going to give them assistance, they're going to get very little from other nations in that region, comparatively.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the things you have to look at. Putin, if he is able to, if his health allows, he can wait it out. And you have to assume that he can.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tires command a lot of attention. As a top expense for drivers and a leading cause of CSA violations, any tire maintenance practice that can help extend tire life is worth consideration. Consider tire balancing, which can set you up for savings and a smoother ride before your tires touch the highway. Tire balancing corrects an uneven distribution of weight in tires and wheel assemblies, but the trick is to be proactive and not reactive. Conduct routine tire inspections and pay special attention to any unusual wear patterns. Once unusual tread wear is visible on a tire, its traction and stopping distance is reduced and its lifespan will likely be shortened.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Well, yesterday they had a Judiciary Committee had a hearing at the border in Yuma, Arizona.
Hmm.
Now, this is one that every Democrat on the Judiciary Committee did not attend because they said they were not giving notification until the last minute. We know that's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
That was shown to be a lie.
Mm-hmm.
They had 3 weeks' notice that this was going to happen. They did it because they would be embarrassed.
Yeah.
You can tell if the left believes that they can win an argument. When they don't show, that proves they can't win the argument.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, and we're going to play Jim Jordan in a moment and what he had to say, but our friend Kevin Tober over at Newsbusters, man, they got a tough job there, that monitor the media,
mm-hmm.
not any mention on NBC, CBS, or ABC, nothing on the fact that this is going on, that this hearing is going on at the border.
Right.
There's a blackout, nothing, because they know they can't win the argument on the border. They know the Republicans will expose the lies of the administration that the border is secure and will bring to the American public the seriousness of what's going on the border. Now, the American public already know it. But the fact is, that's why the Democrats, they're cowards. And it also shows that they don't care about border cities. You know, they interviewed the management of one hospital there, says, we're going to go bankrupt. We're spending so much money, and we don't have it, and we're not being reimbursed by the federal government. They've completely ignored us.
Yep.
That they're destroying health care in these border cities because they're bankrupting these hospitals,
mm-hmm.
because they're allowing it to go on, and since they can't admit that it's going on, then they can't reimburse the hospitals. Because the border is secure.
Yeah.
And if they have to reimburse the hospital and they talk about the problems these hospitals are having, well, then they're making the admission that things are out of control at the border. And even though the American public knows it, they know they can't admit it because they've been denying it and telling Americans the border is secure. It is just the most, I mean, the Democratic Party, and, you know, look, we criticize both parties when we feel we should, but it isn't. Whoever said it, who was it who said, it's not about right or left anymore. It's not about Democrat versus Republican. It's Republicans versus insanity.
Yeah.
And it's pure insanity.
It is.
Here's Jim Jordan yesterday in some of his comments.
It's a shame that not one Democrat member of Congress would join us on this trip despite having weeks of advance notice. It's disappointing, but it's not surprising. In fact, the Democrats have called this a stunt. I would argue it's not a stunt. My guess is our witnesses wouldn't call it a stunt. What we've learned today from them, what we've seen last night on the border, but it's disappointing that they're not here. Democrats dismiss the experiences of these real people that we've had a chance to visit with the last 24 hours, people affected by the Biden border crisis, and Democrats seem to believe that solutions can only come from bureaucrats in Washington. We actually think they come from the American people.
There you go. I mean, it's really amazing. It's amazing, but they don't have any other choice. You know, when you think about it, the Democrats don't have any other choice because they've been lying about what's been going on at the border. They approve of what's going on at the border.
Yep.
And they know to sit there, you know, what questions are they going to have for these people, for these hospital people, for these Border Patrol people? They can't ask any questions to them.
Because no, they can't. No, everything is going to turn on them. This entire thing has turned on them. And in a committee situation, you're just not going to get the win if you're a Democrat. There is no way. So what do? They fake a protest.
Yeah.
We didn't have proper notification.
That's a
lie.
And it was an obvious lie. Yeah, the Yuma Regional Medical Center,
mm-hmm.
Yuma's only hospital, and the CEO there, according to Bill Malusian of Fox News, says They are on the verge of financial collapse after the hospital spent more than $20 million in 6 months providing care for illegal immigrants and migrants with no reimbursement and nobody to foot the bill.
Yeah. We've heard this story, by the way, going on in border states and towns for years. What's going on with hospitals is tragic. And it's tragic because the Democrats don't care anything about it. They're not about to fix this.
They don't care about the healthcare system down there. They don't care about the illegal immigrants.
No.
They don't care.
No,
all
they don't.
All they care about is open borders and this delusion that if we have open borders, we're eventually going to get these people to vote.
Yep. Right.
Democrat.
If I'm Jordan, set up some more hearings down the road and make the notification very public.
Yeah.
Tell the media when you notify Nadler and all the rest.
The IRS, the world's most aggressive collection agency. They can seize your property, bank.
Five hours a night and still not enough. Listen to our podcast available on the app and on our website, RedEyeRadioShow.com.
And he is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So, yeah, you know that the Democrats don't believe, they don't want to touch the border.
No.
It's just ignored as if it's not happening.
Right.
If the networks thought that they had, you know, because you think about it, oh, the networks could say, see, here are the Republicans down here just playing politics with the border at this hearing, and, well, they can't do that.
Right.
Well, who are the witnesses? They brought in the CEO from the local hospital.
Mm-hmm.
They brought in Border Patrol agents. They brought in people that have been victims. They brought in how this has drained public resources, how it's destroying the town, and how the federal government has ignored them. The networks can't cover it. They can't find a way to spin it.
No, they can't. There is no way. And that's the problem for them going forward, because this isn't going to end here. Jim Jordan is not going to just say, okay, well, I guess they didn't show up. We're going to end this. This is going to be brought up over and over again, and Nadler and the Democrats, they're not going to be able to defend against this. You know, if you think about it, that excuse that they gave, oh, we didn't get proper notification, which was a blatant lie, but it was a really stupid excuse, too. Because you look at the calendar of the committees and everything else, and anybody, even if you're not you're not following it day to day, you look at that and go, what do you mean they didn't get notification, proper notification? What else are they going to be doing on that day? Of course they get, those guys get notification. It's a stupid excuse. So instead of saying, and remember what they tried to say on other committees, what they have been talking about, and the question is coming up about Hunter and the one hearing recently. It's, well, we could be doing other things. We need to be doing other, we can't be, this is wrong that we're, and it's, they're screaming because they don't have control. And the American people, you look at the polls on the border, they lose. The Democrats lose every single time. And it would be better just to go along with it and answer and just ask questions and not try not to make a political moment out of it. Just quietly ask questions and then, you know, and be boring about it so that you don't get the soundbite, so that when it's over, it's just over.
But when you're saying that this is just this is just all show from the Republicans, if you believed you could sell, they said it,
mm-hmm.
but they couldn't sell that argument to the networks to carry it.
Right.
They're not on the network saying the Republicans are having this and it's a show trial. There is no problem at the border.
Mm-hmm.
They're not defending even on friendly media.
Right.
They're not going to the media saying, look, you need to cover this because the Republicans are doing something horrendous. There is no problem at the border, and they're going down, and we reject going down there to the border because there is no problem, and ABC, NBC, and CBS, you need to hear our side of it. That's not happening.
No.
Nope. Because they know they have nothing.
And what are they going to do? You know, I mean, AOC tried to say we need to tackle more important issues like abortion rights. But honestly, on the immediate issues right now, what are they going to say? We need to have a hearing on the train derailment? That's not going to go their way either. We're going to need to have a hearing on the whole balloon thing. That isn't going to work. Where do they go?
We need to have a hearing on why the administration promised tanks to Ukraine that may never appear in Ukraine. Why is the president doing that? I need to talk about defending Ukraine. You're right. There isn't a topic they really can talk about.
There isn't a topic. So what do they do? Well, they do what what's-her-name said that her friends did in 2016 that were, you know, that were supporting Hillary.
Maureen Dowd.
That they close their door, they draw their money. This is what Nadler and the rest of them did. We're just going to stay home, and we're just going to, well, we'll just draw the blinds, and we'll just close the door. It's we weren't given enough time. We didn't get a notification is a flat-out lie.
Yep.
And it's a lame lie. Because here's the thing. But what else do they say? And honestly, what else do they say? There are, on the border thing, there are more important issues? Go ahead and say that out loud. This is the only thing they could do, and that's pretty bad. You know they've lost when the only thing they can do is stay home and not be a part of it. Because, you know, look, they're filled with a whole list of cards that they can play when it comes to protesting and excuses and everything else. You know, the Senate confirmation hearings on justices where they got up and they walked out and, all right. Well, you don't get away with that here. And you don't dare say something like, we need to be tackling more pressing issues than the border. So the only thing you can do is stay home.
You know, what are the other issues? Well, let's have one on the grid.
Right.
You want to talk about whether solar and wind can actually supply enough electricity to the United States? You guys want to have that hearing?
Right.
By the way, the Republicans, I believe, will have a hearing on that eventually. But they need to bring in energy people to talk about where the country is going there also. The problem is the Democratic Party has gotten to the point where they can't defend to the American public anything that they believe unless they do it in a meme or a slogan.
Right.
Or make a statement like, solar and wind will provide energy for everybody. And then they walk off and there's no questions.
Right, right.
You know, let us make the statement, but no questions, no follow-ups, no debate,
right?
No witnesses, mm-hmm. Nothing.
Yeah.
And by the way, even on the, we talked about this, even on the Hunter Biden thing, the American public, we've seen the polling on it. The American public doesn't agree with the Democrats. They believe that influence peddling is definitely something that should be talked about, and the fact that 82% want congressional investigations. Remember, the vast majority of Americans, it was close to 80% want hearings on Hunter Biden.
Yeah, right.
And it was 82% for the balloons.
Yeah.
They want a congressional investigation, right. Which means Republicans.
Exactly. No, I mean, there is no win. There is no out except for staying home. You know, I suggest that, you know, I brought up the idea of, look, you just go there and you just quietly ask some boring questions and get it over with. But I don't know what those questions would be. I really don't. I mean, I even trying to put my mindset into a liberal mindset of what you would ask, like the hospital CEO, I mean, I could hear maybe one of the liberals saying or asking the question, do you believe a single-payer system would help in this situation? There's just no win. There's nowhere to go. And the more I look at it, the more I actually do believe that their best bet was to sit this one out, literally, stay home.
Yeah. Just stay home.
Just stay home.
Is the best way for us not to get killed more on this topic.
Because we would just get buried, and we can't protest it in any other way but to come up with some lame excuse that we were, and lie, not an excuse, but a lie, that we weren't given enough notification. Like I said, I think Jordan should continue this and do another one and then be very vocal in the media. We have sent the minority party a notification on the dates, and it's going to be, and there you go. And
yeah, you do another one, for example, in El Paso.
Exactly.
We're having another hearing in El Paso.
Right.
It will be 60 days from now.
Right. And we have sent this. This is a copy of the letter that I sent.
Yes.
To all the Democrats on the committee, and this, including the ranking member, and this is a copy for you in case anybody has any questions, and that went out this morning, and these will be the dates of the hearing.
I want to say this, that the Republicans in the House must be listening to Red Eye, because we suggested this for Trump. We said it's not enough for you to sit up there and say build the wall. Remember what we suggested do?
Yeah.
He go and he leads roundtables at the border
with people that are dealing with it every day.
Right. Yep. Now, and he doesn't really, he may ask questions of them, but he gets somebody who is, you know, I don't know whether it's a friendly journalist, you know, back then somebody from Fox or whatever, that to ask the questions about it, and Trump can, you know, interject and say, well, what about this? But have Trump ask the questions. You know, I believe there should be more border security here, that we need to do something. I think the wall would help. Other people think different things, but what is this? Tell us what the situation is so we can come to a conclusion, you know, to how bad it is. And you talk to those, and we said he should have done these town halls. Town hall, but not town hall with just normal people.
Right.
A town hall with, as they did, Border Patrol, hospital people, mayors, the impact, you know, of what's going on. And he should have done that to sell the wall. And he should have been doing it every couple of months all the way through, you know, the first couple of years of his administration.
Yep.
And the Republicans, I don't think, should stop here. I think they should hold another one and then hold the Democrats. Look. It's all about politics. Yeah, they're politicians, so everything's about politics. But is the politics and the message in the politics the correct message or the wrong message? Is the message in the politicizing of an issue the truth or a lie? That's what matters.
Right.
The politicalization means nothing because they're politicians and that's what they do. And if they believe they have something that the American people want to hear, and it's the truth, and it's where the American people stand, and they talk about it, and they're accused of politicizing, who cares?
Right. No, I mean, that's it. Is it an issue that concerns the American people? Yes. All right, then great. It's time to get down to the truth as to what's going on and how to fix it.
Right. So they said this is all going to be it's all for show. It's all show. They're just politicizing this. Are they, when they talk to the CEO of a hospital, is that politicizing something in the wrong way? Is it showboating to bring on Border Patrol agents and people that are being affected by the illegal immigration? Is it showboating to talk about towns and hospitals that are going bankrupt because the federal government, because of their policy and the administration, caused this and won't reimburse them for the hell that they've caused these cities? Is that showboating?
Right.
Well, then go ahead. Say that showboating. boy, I want to be able to debate that one, they can, Republicans can, because they're bringing people and normal people and hot medical people that their lives and professions are being destroyed because of the policies of the Biden administration and the Democrats.
Right.
So go ahead, say it's showboating, and then go do the work, and then show the American people the work, and then go do it again a couple of months ago in El Paso.
Right.
And then go to Del Rio.
Yes. Because when those hospitals suffer, when they're in such danger of going under, then the citizens that live in those towns don't have the hospitals and the care they need.
Right.
It's a very clear case. And there is no way to win this if you're a Democrat, unless you're a border Democrat like Cuellar in Texas, that are screaming at their own party.
Yeah, it's called Biden care.
Yeah, exactly.
866-90 Red Eye.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Check out all the latest in news, events, trucking information, and podcasts at Red Eye Radio's website at RedEyeRadioShow.com. That's RedEyeRadioShow.com.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So Andrea Mitchell, has she responded? You saw that DeSantis said, nope, sorry, no interviews with anybody associated with NBC, NBC Universal, MSNBC, whatever. We're getting calls for interviews. Sorry, all done, unless she apologizes. And she was imprecise in her apology. And he said, sorry, the apology isn't good enough. You lied.
Yeah.
You need to apologize for the lie.
Right.
You lied and said that in the state of Florida that I don't want to teach about slavery. You lied about it.
You said something you knew wasn't true. You didn't make a mistake. You said something deliberately that you knew was not true.
Yep. We'll get to more of that coming up.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy, game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah. Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.